All right, welcome back to the Outdoor Adventures Podcast. I am sitting here with Nathan Endicott. How you doing, Nathan?
Doing well.
Thanks for having me. So he's super gracious guy, allowed me to come and invade his space a little bit, and we got set up. And his wife, never met her before, and she's bringing us food and tea and all kinds of stuff. So far, the Endicott family, I'm pretty impressed.
So. Yeah, my wife is a sweetheart. Thanks.
And that's how really my motivation for wanting to interview you was I met you at the Sportsman's Show in Albany last year, and I saw how you guys interacted, you and your family, with everyone at the show. So, you know, everybody wants to come up and hang out with you guys and tell stories and talk. And just the human in me was going, man, that's got to be kind of tiring, you know, 3 days of everyone coming at you. But you guys were so gracious to everyone that came to your booth and everyone that you interacted with. I was just really impressed with how your family handles that. And I don't know if you see yourselves this way, but, you know, I think in the hunting community, everybody wants to talk to the Endicotts. You know, you just have that kind of name about you. But then once people meet you, it's probably works to your disadvantage. You guys are so nice that then people don't want to go away, you know? So.
Yeah, that's a lot of thanks to my dad. I mean, he's in the archery service business. So, I mean, he really takes care of his customers and forms relationships. And so, I mean, that's the way our family is, and he carries it to the business.
Yeah. Yeah, I got my first bow at the bow rack, my only bow. And Kyler took me there and got me set up after 3 hours with Trent. Mm-hmm. And he was so diligent about making sure my sight was perfect and everything, because I kept chalking as I was releasing, but I'd never shot a bow before. But he made sure that that bow arrow was going to go clean, you know?
Yeah.
Kyler was pacing the room going, when are we going to get out of here, you know? So.
Yeah, but Trent's my one of my favorites. I'll have to say one of my favorites. He does such a good job. And mm-hmm. Yeah, he does. He works. He won't like let the customer leave without making sure everything's perfect.
Yeah.
He's awesome.
Yeah, I was really impressed. And I've always gone back since then whenever I need stuff. So I haven't taken anything with my bow yet. So I grew up as a rifle hunter. And then the archery hunting kind of came into play about 4 or 5 years ago. And I've had some close calls and some, you know, we had a big bull coming in last year that was about 120 yards, but he just never got closer to us. So
he was screaming or
mm-hmm. Yeah. My cousin got him to come in over on the east side. And, but anyway, so, the other thing that I noticed from you at the Sportsman Show was just, you have an engineering background, correct? And so I went to your talk on hunting and the way that your analysis, however you say that, like the way you analyze your hunts and just how you go about things, you have that, you can see that that engineer brain kind of transfers over to your hunting life. And do you see that as a service or a disservice sometimes?
I don't know. That's a good question. I obviously love to do research and I do that in my work. So I'm a civil engineer and a lot of the work I do at a water industry is at a water utility and within the water industry is to research the best products, what's new and available and how to do design work better. So I'm constantly recommending alternatives and things like that. And I have to really read specs, make sure everything's like perfect and tight before we bid out. So that carries into the work I do. And when I was asked to speak at the Sportsman Show, I thought it'd be neat to just kind of showcase the blacktail opportunity across the West. Blacktail mm-hmm. gets overlooked a lot. And I thought it would be a neat opportunity to talk about that and where I found opportunity, because it's kind of dissipating for mule deer. And a lot of folks like the mule deer opportunity across the West, but that is being reduced. So blacktail, there's still opportunity right now in the West Coast states. And I just wanted to talk about that. So I broke it down at the regulation level and then highlighted the key differences between the states and how you could structure some hunts to do them all.
Yeah, it was really good. I mean, when I sat there listening to you, I was like, man, he thought of every little detail and he's sharing it with all of us, you know? So you did a really good job. And, you know, the other thing that kind of drew me to you was watching your video with your wife from her blacktail. And I just shared that I just got to meet her for the first time, but just shared with her, like that video to me brought some of the things as hunters, like we, you know, oftentimes we see the really polished cuts and the perfect videos and the, you know, the editing that comes into play. And it was a really cool hunt, and you guys show a little bit of the ins and outs of why you do what you do. But, you know, like I said earlier, it's, you guys both saw the buck bedded, and then when it stood up, she couldn't see him right away. And you could just hear that excitement in your voice of, he's right there, you got to shoot him, you got to shoot him, you know.
And frustration.
Yeah. I mean, there's always a little bit of that. Yeah. But when you're the guy that, see, I was shared with you, when we saw the blacktail this year, my son couldn't see him. I mean, especially with blacktail, I feel like, because they freeze, and if you aren't looking in the exact spot, you're not going to see him.
Yep.
Unless you're the one that saw him, you know. But you guys ended the hunt with success, and I got, you know, getting to see that celebration between family members is always really neat to see. Because I just showed you the video of my son after he killed his buck. I handed him my phone, and all I wanted to do was hug on him and celebrate, and he was complaining about his ears ringing so bad that he couldn't really do that with me. So I had him shoot a 6.5 PRC, which might have been a little too big a gun for a 12-year-old. So yeah. That's kind of dad's fault.
Yeah, but that was really neat. And I mean, yeah, I want to involve my family as much as possible. And it is hard. We have four kids. And so we had three of them on that day. And so pulling that off was just like a minor miracle.
Yeah.
And it's like a high pressure area. There was trucks everywhere. Mm. And we even had like spectators, like a couple hunters watching us, like as we got down and got in position to shoot the buck. And then they helped us because we had all the kids with us, of course. And I just took my one son, Aya, down to the buck to recover it with my wife. It was very interesting, not the way I typically hunt, but just I have to be willing to adjust and adapt to be able to include my family and make sure it's fun for them.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I was pushing the double bob with the baby on my chest, who was 1 month old.
Yeah.
And kudos to my wife for even wanting to go, you know, with a 1 month old. And so we made it happen. It's a pretty funny video.
That's impressive though, honestly, because you don't see that behind the scenes that you've got, that you're juggling the whole family too, you know?
Yeah.
My cousin's wife came on our last Eastern Oregon hunt. And when I got my buck, I was in the bottom and she had her baby on like one of those baby Bjorn backpack type things. She came cruising down that hill with the baby on her back and cruising all the way back up. And then she did the same thing with her buck. So it's amazing that what these ladies are willing to do to kind of support. But I mean, your wife's a hunter as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah, she really loves the whole process beginning to end, and getting into hunting was really hard to, not really grow up doing it. Her dad hunted, but she didn't. So then to kill an animal was a huge first step. So she wanted to see me do it. So she was with me. It was hard. She got over it. And then after the patience and work involved with bow hunting, she finally like, I really want to get something. And that was the change for her. And then now she just wishes she can go more often.
Yeah. Well, the thing of it is too, with the animal part of it, all of us love to get out there in the pursuit of the animal. The actual harvest, the older I get, the less, and not that I enjoyed it ever necessarily, the taking the life of an animal, I don't take that lightly, but the older I get, the less I want to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
So this year I had my son who was 12 and it was his first year, but I really, obviously as a dad, you really want your son to be successful. And so I got all the joy of the hunt, but he was the one that had to pull the trigger, which kind of worked well for me because I've got meat in my freezer and I got to get those experiences with my son.
Yeah.
So
no, I'm right there with you. Gosh, my son, he's obsessed, wants to go all the time. And I started doing some shed hunting and I took him and he found an antler. And I took him again and he found a set. So he thinks every time we go out hiking, you find antlers.
Right.
And it's like, it's not really that easy, but it is neat to see. It's way more enjoyable for me to share it. And obviously with my family, so much more than even just the common friend or whatever.
I was going to ask you that, like what your game plan is for your kids as they go towards hunting. Because my daughter's 14. She had no desire. Like I asked her, hey, do you want to go on the hunt? You know, like you're more than welcome and I can start buying you points at 9 and like I did with him. And she just doesn't want to do it. So, but my son has taken to it. So,
yeah. That's a good question. So I come from kind of a split family, mom's side, dad's side, and mom's side didn't hunt, but there was family members that were really into hunting. And then dad's side obviously hunts and I have a lot of siblings. So I got to witness, how each family was different and how my dad involved the kids. And he's always really, all about and encourages taking youth and kids hunting to introduce them. Very involved with that. So I got to kind of witness that and what some of my sisters, you know, maybe didn't want to have anything to do with hunting. So I feel like there's a good balance there that I've learned to influence the way I want to bring my kids into it. And for starters, it's like, I want them to have fun. Mm-hmm. I want them to associate going out in the woods with a good time, not such a hard time that they resent it. And especially the women. So like my daughter, I've only taken her out when she wants to go. And she makes it very clear when she does and doesn't. And she's very articulate, very smart. And she's just turning 7. So she's very young, mm-hmm. but she knows exactly. And there's been times where she's like, hey, I really want to go bear hunting. And that's the one thing that she keeps repeating. So I think at some point I'll revisit it with her, but I'm definitely not like pushing it. Now my son, he begs and cries to go like, and I have taken him hunting and I almost got a bull last year with him standing at my feet. So it's different. It's the motivation. I kind of let them tell me what they want to do. And then, of course, make it as fun as possible. Because for a child, I mean, they don't remember much other than the feeling they had.
Yeah.
And if the feeling is me getting mad at them for screwing it up, like, probably not going to want to go. And and that's all. I mean, they just know how to like, hunting's hard.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be quiet. You got to.
Patience.
You got to be able to step over logs. And so usually they're either in my backpack or I'm helping them the whole time. But I love that they really get the dependence on you. They really, you know, understand that, you know, I've got to be with dad and I've got to keep up, or not just keep up, but depend on him to help me get through to today. And at home, you know, kids can be unruly at times. So it's really neat to take them outside and then they get it. It's like, it's not easy. It's not home.
Yeah. It helps them understand why you do it too, I would guess, you know, because they get to see some of that joy that you've experienced. And well, it sounds like you're going about it the right way. That's good. Cool. The kids should be amped up.
Yeah, I've got a lot of kids, so I'll tell you in 20 years if it worked or not.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure I'll find out before then. Well, let's talk about this year. So, you know, you've hunted, we were just counting the states, and so it was 4 different states. So it was Washington, California, Alaska, and Oregon, correct?
Yeah.
And just wanted to kind of know your motivation behind those hunts and what, because you had a really good year last year. You got your drop tine buck, right? And so I watched that video and, you know, that with you and your buddy killed those nice big bucks on the same day. And that was kind of like, man, this is going to be a tough year to follow.
Yeah.
And then you follow it up with what you were able to do this year. So why don't you kind of lead us into that, set the table for what this year looked like?
Yeah. Yeah. So last year I went to California for the first time and it was brutal. Like I hunted probably, well, between scouting, I think I scouted 3 different trips, total of probably 7 or 8 days, and then hunting during the archery season, and then it rolls into a rifle season with the same tag. So I was able to hunt on a few trips, like 5 or 6 trips, 3 to 5 day trips. And so I don't know the number, but 28 days of hunting in California to have nothing. Mm. And folks don't really... No, I don't put out stats really. I don't share every trip. I don't make it obvious what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of background that's not seen. And so it was very brutal. And then Oregon elk, I came super close multiple times. I had my son with me at my feet when I hit a bull in the shoulder and it was moving. And so the arrow didn't get any penetration. And that was kind of a heartbreaker because I really wanted to get a bull with my son and that bull's completely fine. I saw him a few days later. And so there was just like hunt after hunt. The Willamette unit, it was right here. I drew the tag. I hunted a lot of days and a lot of half days because it's local and did not get it done. And it was just thing after thing after thing. And then the late hunt comes around and I had like an almost didn't recover the buck. And I show that in my Overcome film and also a little bit in the film with Wyatt that's called Pinnacle. And so I just wanted to be transparent in that hunting doesn't always go your way, especially with archery. It's really difficult. You make judgment calls. Sometimes you make the right decision. Sometimes you don't. And then with all of that effort just to have the one buck, of course, it's like a buck of a lifetime, but you don't really get the sense of like how much time I'd put in and the sacrifice at home and my wife willing to help me do those hunts. And I just wanted to come home with more to show for it. And I didn't. So going into, so the sportsman show happens and I talk about all these states and it was just kind of eating at me that like, I didn't get it done in California. And I tried so hard. I put all my effort towards California.
You had an opportunity to a really big buck there.
I missed what would be a world record with a bow.
Because I think one of your films, you talk about it on camera too and tell us, like, I just missed this giant. And you can just tell the disappointment. You know, I mean, obviously that's part of the deal, right?
But Yep. It's a non-typical buck. And the current world record, Pope and Young, archery, velvet, non-typical Columbia blacktail is like, it was like 157. And this buck, I look at it a lot. I have film of it. You can judge by the ears, the body size, all of that. The buck's in the 170s and he's symmetrical about his non-typical frame. So that's a scoring machine. So it's a like a 135 4x4 with like over 30 inches of extras. It's just, it's a hard to believe this animal exists on public land, and something that I had to myself. Like, I screwed it up all on my own. There's just me and this buck, and I rushed it. And anyway, I get down. The buck had double backed on a trail it was on that I saw it when glassing. So I was on a stalk, didn't know it double backed, and it bedded where it could see where it just came from. So I was looking and gritting through really an open burn hillside where the buck had been last, and he was watching me. And so then when I finally saw it, the buck was alerted and it was going to jump. It was going to go at any time. And I hit a limb. The tree kind of arcs from the heat from that burn. And so I thought I was below the tree limb. I shoot and my arrow, I just see it perfectly kick up. So it sent into outer space. And last time I saw that buck. So it was a heartbreaker.
But that also probably motivated you for going back to California, I would think. That might have been a little bit of the motivation.
A lot of motivation from that. I wanted to find that buck. Never found him. I put up a couple cameras, which I don't do. And I just wanted to see if he was in the area again. And he never showed in that area. So it's massive country. Could be anywhere.
Yeah. Odds are he's still out there, I would guess.
I hope so.
Yeah.
So yeah, California. So there was motivation from that. I was talking about California, Oregon, Washington, and Alaska in that talk I gave at the Sportsman Show. I was walking through all the details. I have done Washington one other time, and it's modern rifle. And with a rifle tag, I rifle hunt. I don't normally rifle hunt, but I'll do it when I have a rifle tag. So anyway, so yeah, in talking through all of that, I also had planned Alaska. Alaska was in the books. It had been like a 3-year planning process with a buddy to go up to Alaska and do Southeast for Sika Blacktail.
And you released that film not too long ago.
Yeah, just a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've hunted Sika Blacktail on Kodiak, and the Southeast experience is way different. There's a lot of timber. You're hunting more of an alpine. It's early as opposed to a late hunt. So the bucks are in the velvet. There's a lot of technical difficulties with hunting this high alpine terrain, steep cliffs, timber, brush, bugs. So there's just all these things that would be a much cooler experience to me. Like, hard and unknown is the cool experience to me. It's just not a give me, you know, there's a lot of work involved. And so I was able to make it happen up there.
Is that part of your motivation for going to these other places, is just to challenge yourself more? Is that what drives you a little bit?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a competitive athlete in college, a distance runner. So, I just like to do stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, that was my motivation for going to Idaho this year, was to challenge myself and see if, like, the mule deer tactics that I've grown up using in Oregon would translate to another place, you know? And I didn't have a tag. I was just along for the ride, but it was going to experience that in new country and new terrain and training and preparing for that. And I got some of that, but the other elements that I was like, this is a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. As far as, you know, we get there the first night and it dumps a bunch of snow. And then we do that large hike I was telling you about that I was worried about my ankles snapping, you know? So do you ever experience that on some of these out of state hunts? Like, you get there and you're like, what did I get myself into? Or do you feel fairly prepared with the other things you've encountered?
It's hard to say there's ever like very prepared for what you could experience, because it could be anything, you know, weather, injury, unfortunate circumstance of any kind. So of course I prepare as much as I can. And I like to think that some of those challenges help me sharpen myself as a human. Like, can I overcome that? No matter what I'm faced. And, that's part of the drive. And I think, I really, some of the reading material that I really like is mountaineering books because it's very technical and they have to problem solve and overcome injury and still survive. And it's cold and it's very unforgiving. You make a wrong choice and you're, you know, done. And so something about that combined with hunting and then harvesting. So there's a purpose because a lot of times mountaineering is like you get to the top. And that could be a cool purpose that's like self-fulfilling, I guess. It's like, man, I made it up here on top of this peak. But for me, it's the self-fulfilling part is that I've harvested something that was very challenging. It's good at staying alive.
Yeah.
The animal that you would kill. And I was able to get it done. And it's kind of unbelievable because archery equipment is just not as 100% as a rifle. So a rifle usually, if you, I don't want to jinx myself, but like, so far, if I squeeze the trigger, the animal dies. Now, with archery, can't say the same.
I can say the opposite on rifle. I've missed a few animals.
But yeah, it happens. It'll probably happen to me, but I don't rifle hunt a lot, and I like to get close. So with archery, it's just not, it's not guaranteed, and I like that. I like knowing that it's not guaranteed, and there's purpose behind it, and it sharpens me as a human, and the challenges to overcome are really fulfulling.
Yeah.
So I guess that's
the answer. Well said. So, you know, you did California and then Alaska and then was Washington next?
Yeah. So Washington was always the biggest contingency to the plan. I could easily have just not done Washington and been happy with the year. But I was telling my wife, like, so there is one more hunt I was kind of hoping to do, and it's Washington. I've done it before, and I even shed hunted a couple times up there, so I scouted. And she was on board with me going for the end of modern rifle. It was the last 2 days of the season, and I was going to use it to scout for the late rifle that Washington also has. And so I went up there, and I saw one deer in 2 days, and it happened to be a good, mature, big 3-point. And that's the buck I shot. It was like 30-yard shot.
Well, that's perfect, because you also saved some expectation from your wife too. Like this was a scouting trip and you came home with a buck, so you didn't have to go back.
Yep.
Exactly. So everybody won on that probably.
I got lucky. That was pretty epic. And it was big timber, big area. Didn't see anybody. It was very, very neat, very rewarding. And I did skip over. So California, I got it done on the opening weekend with my bow this year. So it was kind of a shocker because I worked so hard last year and then on Sunday of the opening weekend, I got a buck. So I almost pulled a double. I shot right over the back of a big 4-point that was bedded with my buck. Mm. And you can, so I have two tags in California. So Alaska was two tags. You can get up to four depending on the zone you're in. And then California, you can get two tags and they go from archery to rifle seasons if you get a zone tag. And you can also buy an archery only tag. Archery only allows you to hunt a few zones. You just have to read the regs on the zones and where you can go. But I was able to get that buck in California with archery and then kind of held out to the end of rifle, ensuring like the best odds for pre-rut activity. Mm-hmm. And so I'd gone to California and got a rifle buck. It was a 10-yard shot on this old buck that I had on camera from 2 years in a row from that spot. So I kind of like put all my eggs in the one basket and it worked out, which is like mind blowing. And it was the first day I was down there. It was on Friday. I had Friday, Saturday, Sunday to hunt of the last weekend and I got it on Friday. And so that's where I came home and had extra time. And then the rifle season ended on the October, Washington, I think it's the 31st, but I got my buck on the 30th in Washington. So it was pretty crazy.
Yeah, it all worked out.
That all worked out.
It all flew together quickly and smoothly.
And then Oregon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is that that would have been the last year then?
Oregon? So the last tag for blacktail was Oregon.
So you got back to your home turf and then got it done here?
Yeah. Which it's my second best blacktail to date. It's the buck's, it's a good 4-point frame, heavy. He's got long main beam, big splits, and that mass is what's kind of deceiving about him in a big body. So the buck's like 142 5/8 with broken tines. And I kind of estimated the broken tines to be about 3 to 4 inches. So, I mean, mid 140s buck. And you know, in Oregon, especially the areas I hunt, that's really big.
That's a really big buck. Yeah.
Yeah. Man. So I was just like shocked because I've hunted a lot of years and then to have the year I had and then end up with that buck. It was like, what? What well, is happening? What
was fascinating to me just kind of watching, you know, as you would update on your Facebook or Instagram or wherever I see your different content, I was just like, what, number one, what's he trying to do? Why is he doing it? And just like pulling it off, it's, I don't know what to really equate it to, but I know they used to always talk about the big five in Africa, which a lot of those things I probably wouldn't want to harvest, but harvesting a bunch of blacktail in the areas it can hunt them. We talked before we got started and you said the only one that also has blacktail would be British Columbia, but you'd have to go with a guide and it wouldn't
outfitter,
be as, yeah, that wouldn't be as authentic of an experience probably for a guy like you. And, you know, plus you have to probably spend quite a bit more money on something like that. But what, I mean, when you went about this, were you thinking it was like, was that the goal, was to harvest an animal in all these states, or it just kind of happened?
It just kind of happened. Yeah. Cause I had the thought since the sportsman show and it was one of those things where I'm talking about it and I'm the planner type. And I'm like, gosh, you know, like I could do all of these hunts in a year, but I wasn't thinking I would actually do it.
You weren't going to be the guy. You're just like, someone could.
Yeah. 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 I was like telling these people that attended the talk, like, this is how you do it. And, so with having a wife, a family, four kids, and not wanting to be away from the house for too long, that's where I really didn't think I was going to be able to do all those hunts, period. Not necessarily even filling the tags, because I just wanted to do them. I didn't even expect to fill tags because I don't want to shoot just anything. Like I want to only feel good about what I'm doing. And for me to feel good about it means it's a mature animal or one of my best that I've... So I was not going to fill my Oregon tag. Yeah. I was just going to go out and I wanted to hunt every day of the season. I do talk about it a little bit on, and I'll eventually make a film, but I just wanted to have a good time.
Yeah.
And I had saved a lot of vacation from day one, day two of these hunts. So I had some time saved up and I was just going to hunt hard and just like be content with not filling a tag. And Oregon's my home state, so I didn't need to kill anything.
Yeah, and you can hunt probably close to your home. You know, you just head out and start hunting. But you've released a couple snippets of just little nature stuff that you've taken and bucks that you got on camera and stuff. So there's, when you just love being in the woods, like most of us hunters do, having a tag in your pocket also kind of gives you that freedom to go get out in the woods.
Yeah.
You know, and I felt a little bit this year for me because I did the two hunts with my son, one on this side, one on the east side, and then I went to Idaho. By the time the end of the season, which just happened because I had a second season archery tag in my pocket, I was kind of relieved. I was like, man, I love hunting, but I'm ready for the season to be done. I want to clean my gear. I want my garage to be cleaned up. So I was thinking about you before I came here and was like, how did you have the stamina to keep going on these different hunts? Mm. You know, like, was it just because the timing worked out the way that it was, or that, you know, did you ever get those weary moments where you're like, oh, I don't know if I want to go on this next one or if I want to stay this extra day or.
Yeah. You mean like a mental stamina?
Yeah.
Yeah. Motivation for it. Yeah, I mean, because a lot of my hunts felt like they were done too soon with animals I was more than happy with. So I wasn't disappointed I was done too soon, but I wanted more. Mm. And so it was neat that I was able to come into the late hunt in Oregon with more time. But then I got a buck on like the third day I hunted. So I still had that desire for more time in the woods. And so to stay mentally ready for all of that. I mean, I'd been thinking about it for a long time and I wanted more time. So it was an easy sell. Plus I could probably live in the woods. Like, some of the harder stuff, just makes me enjoy being out there more.
Well, now that you've done it, if you go to reteach these classes, you'll have some proof in the pudding, you know, like, hey, look, I did it in 1 year. You can do it. I think it's a pretty neat accomplishment. I think it's something that probably not a lot of people have done, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. I not to say that I ever do something for just, there's some things that are just goals, like to run a 10K or to break a certain time. Like those are all things that I set goals, work towards them, measure my results, and then see how I show. Did I achieve the desired outcome? But with hunting, it's so uncertain. You can't necessarily set a goal because I don't even know what I want. I just want to have a good time. I want to work hard. I want to try until I either fail or it works out. So it's not like I set out to say that I did this thing. Because again, the whole time I didn't think I was actually going to do it all. I just had this lofty idea. It's like a dream, yeah. You know, what if it all worked out? That'd be cool. And it worked out. Yeah. But yeah, I definitely want to take it to the Sportsman Show. I want to share. I'm going to share again this February. I think the dates are set. You can Google it. Albany Sportsman Show.
I think it's the Willamette Valley Sportsman Show.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's February, I think, usually.
And I think the title is like a West Coast Blacktail, and then how to hunt more blacktail, something like that. Mm. And
extend your blacktail season.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And so I'll talk about all those states and just how to logistically like pull it off.
So I grew up as mostly a mule deer hunter, even though we have blacktail in our backyard and the house I'm in now has blacktail that come in every day. And, but we just always hunted mule deer. I mean, that's what my dad did. And so that's what we did, you know, and we'd go over there and you used to go like every other year and then tags got harder and harder to get. And now we know we're going to go through some changes in 2026 to all that as well, which hopefully all that works for the better of the population and the animals, you know, but I never really blacktail hunted and my cousins all did. And they always talk about how great blacktail was. And they harvested some nice bucks over the years and they'd take me to some of their spots and every once in a while we'd get a buck, but I just never got the bug until this year with my son. So seeing those blacktail, we walked past, I guarantee it, a buck this year that was just frozen and staring at us in the fog. And I saw the double white patch and I knew there was something. And I glassed it, but we decided to make a play in towards it and then could never see it again. And I know 100% it was a buck because when we harvested the buck later, it was the exact same visual, you know? Yeah. And I got this whole new, like I finally had, and I'm 45 and I finally had this aha moment with like blacktail hunting is awesome, you know? And it took a long time for me to kind of drink the Kool-Aid and I'm fully on board now. I mean, it was... When it actually works is because they're so difficult to see. I think a lot of people probably walk past them. Like they're very smart. Whereas mule deer, they have a lot more open country. They will freeze for a minute, but then they always start moving again. Yep. Blacktail seem to just like freeze and not stop freezing, you know? And so that was what I learned this year, you know?
Yeah. No, and yeah, you definitely nailed it. So in my experience, the terrain and the predator that the animals had to adapt from kind of drives what they do after they see you. So blacktail are used to watching their predator whatever is trying to kill them, walk by, not see them. So they're more likely to hold and watch you go by. Now, if you focus in on and then advance towards, like they're going to run. Mm-hmm.
But if you're making them nervous.
Yeah. If you hold real still or even kind of like sidestep towards them.
Don't make eye contact.
And look away. Mm-hmm. There's some does that I always kind of practice on. Like whenever I'm hunting, if there's a doe and I know a buck's not in the area, I'll kind of practice. I'll stand around for a long time and not look at them and just let them see me. And then I'll take some sidesteps and look away. And then after a while, these does are coming to me and just wanting to be curious what I was. Mm-hmm. And they weren't alarmed. So now deer that have been shot at or chased, like they run like they've been shot at a cannon. So, yeah. But deer that are not super familiar with humans will be very curious.
We're going to start calling you the deer whisperer. You're like the Jane Goodall of the black-tailed deer, you know? Like, that's probably a reference that's before your time, but yeah, she was chimpanzee lady, you know? Oh, and so she lived with them and then eventually they kind of just would get used to her and come right up to her, you know?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk to you a little bit too about just your faith and kind of your relationship between nature and God and kind of what you experience out there. One thing leading us into this that I experienced this year in Idaho, I was kind of weary. We'd been hunting, I don't know, 3 or 4 days. And I took a toll on my joints and just my body was a little sore and it was snowy and cold. And we're up on the top of this mountain. And I just kind of had a little conversation with God. And I said, hey, God, you know, I want to just appreciate your country and not necessarily have to harvest an animal or put pressure on the moment. I just open to whatever you have to show me today. And I prayed that prayer and I'm not a huge bald eagle guy because I eat my sheep, you know? Oh, so, yeah. But I like them in the natural world, but these two bald eagles came in, caught the wind, and just flew up like kites, like right in front of me. And it was just a cool little nature experience. And I'm sure you've had some of those encounters with as much time as you've spent in the woods. So I thought if you could just share some of those just cool nature moments, or even how maybe some spiritual moments that were connected to those.
Yeah. When I think about that, a lot of the times I think about my dependence on not just myself. So if you're out in the woods, and you kind of touched on it earlier with preparation, and do you ever... So you touched on it earlier with preparation, and do you ever feel like you're not prepared? Do you get out there and question yourself, like, what am I doing? And those sort of thoughts sometimes can happen when you're in over your head, or it is a blizzard and it's windy and your tent's about to fall apart, or things don't go your way, like you spill boiling hot water on your sleeping bag, your mat, and all these things that can go wrong. And you're like, man, I just have goofed up. Like, I'm not as good as I thought I was. And some of those challenging moments make you realize, like, I don't have it all together. And there's something obviously outside of myself that I depend on. Mm-hmm. And so that connection with being out in nature and harsh environments, hard situations, that's where I really feel like I can trust in God and trust in my faith, that whatever happens, I feel very confident that God hopes the best for me. Mm-hmm. And his will is usually what I'm always at the mercy of. It's his will be done, not mine. And so there's things that I kind of tell myself and just say, you know, I was created to do this and to challenge myself. And I want to be smart, but also kind of depend and trust on God through this situation that I'm about to get into. Praying throughout the day kind of helps me stay focused and still mentally be strong to know that I'm doing the right thing, that I shouldn't, you know, when my wife says, yes, I want you to go out there and I want you to do what you love to do. So just kind of helping pray through those things remind me that I'm in the right spot at that time. I don't have to necessarily be somewhere else. So I can really focus on just singly focused, just exactly where I should be is right where I'm at. Don't have to worry about something else.
Yeah. Well said. Yeah. I know that, for me in those moments, do you know who Jay Yellis is? He was a pro bass fisherman, but he lives around here. But anyway, I talked with Jay and he came on the show kind of early on when we got started on this thing. And Jay says it really well. I don't know. Something keeps beeping on our computer. I don't know what it is, but, we're not running out of time. I mean, I'm sure you're probably ready to get back to other things as you're a busy guy. But anyway, Jay said, because a lot of people will say, yeah, I prayed and God brought me this buck or God brought me this elk. And I do think that God could do that for us. I mean, he's a big God. I don't put him in a box. He can do whatever he wants to do. But I think he's got a lot of other bigger things to worry about than our success in hunting. And I think appreciating his nature that he's created for us, and really, honestly, the way that you hunt is doing a service to that, because you're putting in the work to harvest a big mature animal in an area where a lot of people probably haven't been, you know? And I think that what Jay said when it came to his fishing, after he became a Christian and got saved, he said, I always worked really hard. I worked harder than everybody else. But what I was missing was God. And he goes, he'll meet you in the middle. You work really hard and you ask him for his favor and his help and he'll meet you right there. But you got to put in the work. You know, it's not a gimme just because we have faith, you know, because I think he's got a lot bigger things to worry about than our success in the woods. So I do think there's that element though of peace while you're out there, knowing where your heart is and that he's built this for you and he's built you and he knows this is one of the things that you love. So he's going to, like you're getting at, kind of keep you safe while you're doing what you love to do.
Yeah.
So.
No, yeah. You brought up some interesting points and I definitely agree. And God is so, in my view, God is so big that I feel like he could do what he wants ultimately. And so sometimes if folks believe that, you know, God gave me this situation, like that is their belief. And I can't question necessarily what they believe, you know, because that is true for them. Mm-hmm. And then just kind of more in my experience, like I don't necessarily view God as the cosmic vending machine. Like mm-hmm. if you put something in, like he's going to send it right out.
Yeah.
But it's more or less like, I just feel like the way the scriptures teach it is that you're one with God. You are the your body is like a temple, and so God dwells in you. And so it's like you have this one-to-one relationship with him at all times. So you're just constantly kind of in conversation with God. It's like, you know, you're just open to whatever could come your way and what you need to do next and what's the next right thing for you. So that's kind of how I view it, but not, and I like to give credit to, of course, to my faith and my faith in God and that God's blessed me, but I view it more as like God's blessed me just to be able to do this, mm-hmm. just to be out here and to breathe heavily. Not everybody gets to do that.
Yeah. And there's so much gratitude, I think, in just the experience, whether it's successful or not. I just feel like I always have so much gratitude to be out there. And that's kind of my dialogue. Like, man, look at how beautiful this is. And I know you see that just based on some of the things that you video or that you take photos of. It's like, there's all these little things that you get to see when you're out there that a lot of people don't get to see. You know, we've talked for quite a while. I don't know kind of where we're at as far as time goes or what else you got going on, but I was going to hit on what's next. That was the last thing I had on my list here. And so do you have a what's next yet? Or are you still kind of in the middle of, man, this was a good season and I should just enjoy that for a while?
Yeah. There's always the next thing. So, just to matter-of-factly answer it. So I will go to Arizona and I have a over-the-counter tag that's good for 2024 and it's open right now. And then I also have a 2025 tag. So
also in Arizona.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's always something going on.
Is that an archery or a rifle?
It's archery.
Okay.
Yeah. OTC archery, mule deer.
And you've done Arizona before?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a couple times. So that is what's next. I'm going to speak at the Willamette Sportsman Show in Albany. And so that is next in February. There's a couple other small things like that I would like to do to invest back into hunters and things that, you know, obviously I'm really passionate about it. So I like to share about it and do podcasting like this, you know, exactly. So that's always what's next. And then, I mean, a lot of family trips. I think it's very important to invest as much as you can in the non-hunting seasons. Mm. And we just went to Seaside last weekend with the family and tried to make as many memories as I can with them. So it's such a short period of time. But yeah. Also, I mean, of course, I want to accomplish goals and desires I have. So the balance there. Next year, I haven't thought that far ahead. There's some hunts that I really would like to do, some adventures. Definitely comes down to scouting for me too. I would really like to put more time into Washington. Mm. It's just so beautiful up there. There's a lot of untouched places. And that kind of drives me too, to find where people don't go and to find honey holes like that. And Washington's like the spot.
Do you think there's less hunting pressure there too, just in general? Or if people are more focused on elk or mule deer or something? Or like, I personally don't feel that blacktail are in trouble. Like, I do think our mule deer have some challenges to get that population back to where it needs to be. And that's a multifaceted issue. We could have a whole podcast on that, you know, but I personally feel like the blacktail are doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Seems like there's a lot of them.
Yeah. There's just things that are trends or popular between California, Oregon, Washington, Alaska. The hunting methods and where people go, where they commonly see deer and how they pull it off. Oregon, I would summarize as really dominant in the private timber company lands mm-hmm. and hunting. And Washington is not like that much different. So the difference too between Oregon and Washington is Oregon, there is a lot of good blacktail habitat in the Cascade Range. So it's drawn folks kind of higher in elevation, and Washington is not much different, but for some reason it hasn't really drawn the same volume of people into the higher elevations. And there's a lot more of it, and it's a lot more rugged, steep and broken country. Mm. It's very, very steep and rugged. So I think that's what kind of separates it, where you can go to Washington and find the very overlooked spots that are beautiful and have like pretty awesome animals, wildlife that live there.
They did reintroduce grizzlies out there, so you got to watch out for those if you go there. Yeah, I don't know if that's a fear for you or not.
No.
I've never bumped into one of those. I've seen a few black bears, but not any grizzlies ever. So I'd like to see one, but I'd like to see it from a reasonable distance, I think. Did you bump into one in Alaska?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In that film I put out, there's a couple Browns. And so we were pretty close, actually. We had just shot Adam's buck, and we turn around to hike up to get our packs. And so we're hiking up the hill, and then Adam turns back around and says, "Dude, there's a bear." And so the bear was like 100 yards away, standing right where we shot from. So had we had our packs with us, we would have been waiting, and we would have been waiting right where that bear ran up. So it's like a dinner bell to them. They hear the gunshot, and then the brown with a cub, so it was a sow with a cub, come running right up. So that would have been a little spooky for us. And we're not like the too cautious types. So it could have been bad. Mm-hmm. Could have been bad, because we would have been, right there with the bear running at us.
Yeah. But we know that God's in control.
Yeah, that's right.
Keeping you safe in that situation.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you for having me and sharing your home and allowing me to come. And you guys were very gracious, very hospitable, more than I deserve. And so just wish you and your family the best, and that you have an awesome holiday season, and look forward to spending some time with you again sometime down the road. So
thank you, Sam.
Thanks, appreciate Nathan. It, yeah. Appreciate it.